Claw Clubhouse. It is Rick, not Brandon. He's still on suspension. It is Rick, Charlie, and Chance hanging out with you as we are making our way rolling into the second hour of the show here today. Broadcasting live on the radio, 105.7 FM, 1340 AM. As always, the podcast is uploaded moments after the show goes off the air. You can check out the Periscope video feed right now on the Facebook and Twitter accounts in case you would like to take in the show in a video type of way. You can also go look up the fanrunradio.com. That is a tremendous website that's got great information and great content covering everything Tennessee, NFL, a little bit of NBA, a little NFL, a little bit of PGA and more. And then finally, last but not least, the Fan Run Radio app. Go ahead and download it. It is in your app store, no matter which one it is. And best part of all, it is free. So you can take the show wherever you are headed throughout the day. But of course, you already knew all of that. All right, without any further ado, man, we got some golf to talk about. We check in with Winged Foot Golf Course, and we check in with the U.S. Open. Chance, we'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, we're going to bring Steve McCullough back in. We had Steve in on Wednesday. We kind of got into he's going to be our new golf expert, former PGA pro, also PGA golf extraordinaire.
Ooh,
he also even dabbles into the sports psychology side of things. And just all-around golf expert. We'll bring Steve in here. Steve, how you doing?
Morning, guys. Good to be with you again.
Good morning.
Good to be with you again. Talk a little U.S. Open. So news and notes from the first day. It didn't really go as the experts kind of thought, and even when we talked to you on Wednesday, as far as course conditions, the nature and difficulty level of the course, it seems like these guys are playing some pretty good golf right now. And as Charlie said, USGA might be going a little easy on them with conditions at Wingfoot.
Well, the USGA has to – they've got to set things up the way they think, you know, will produce a great champion and make it tough. And then the weather takes over. So yesterday, the conditions were as benign as they could possibly be. And so that's as easy as it's going to get was yesterday.
Yeah, our day one leader include Justin Thomas, also Patrick Reed, the guy that everyone loves to hate, who sunk in a hole in one that really got no reaction from any of his colleagues out there on the course. Talk about what Thomas and Reed have done on day one that you've seen so far. Justin Thomas came in as a decent favorite in this as well.
Thomas looks really solid. I like his approach, and I also like his state of mind. He looks like he's staying very calm, very in the moment. And I kind of like him headed into the weekend. Reed's so funny to watch because he's like everybody's bad guy.
Yeah,
he is. When he hit that, go ahead.
Yeah, he just uses that. You know, I think he feeds off of that. I think it fuels him.
I think so, too. I mean, when you saw him hit that ace yesterday, you looked over at his the guys he was on the course with. That was Webb Simpson and Hideki Matsuyama. And just, as Chance said, no reaction from them on the course. I mean, absolutely none. I know that, you know, there'd be a fair level if you don't want to go crazy on the course, but man, not even really so much of a smile as what's his name? As Patrick Reed hit that shot.
He's you know, it's one thing to be kind of a bad boy with the fans, but I don't think Patrick is real well liked by the players, and that's not good. I mean, that kind of makes him kind of isolated out there.
Sure, that makes sense. So, Steve, I'm looking at the leaderboard right now, and we actually have the tournament going on in front of us right here, so we're kind of watching it while we're doing the show today. And I see a bunch of storylines just from looking at the story, just from looking at the scoreboard, seeing what I remember from yesterday. But when you're watching this thing here today, what are the biggest things you're keeping your eye on as the golfers are on the course today?
Well, we want to see if fan favorite Phil Mickelson can make the cut. He shot 9 over yesterday. But so far today, he's right in there. He's even par. And there's only Well, in the morning group that's out there, I think there's only about 8 guys that are under par right now out of about 72 players. So Phil's playing real well today.
Yeah, you talk about, you know, Phil, Tiger also still trying to make the cut. And this U.S. Open is one of the more tougher tournaments as far as cut lines. I mean, they only take the top 50 compared to 70 in the Masters, along with some of those other majors. Talking about the course, and, you know, it was perceived as going to be pretty tough over this major. And like you said, some guys now, 8 guys you said, are not even at par for this morning. Looking at how things have played out, do you think there will be any changes, like to any drastic changes, I guess, like as far as pin movement to really toughen it up? Because it seemed like some of the guys really weren't having too difficult of a time.
I don't think they're going to have to toughen it up too much, because the story with the course is still, it's the rough, as you've seen. Phil was in the rough. I don't know how many fairways Phil hit yesterday. Maybe 3 out of maybe 14 chances.
He hit the wrong one time.
Oh man, and the greens. Look, you can't even appreciate the undulation in those greens. The way those greens slope, and they have the false fronts, and it's just so difficult. If you're on the wrong side of the hole, you're just dead.
One thing though that they've talked about is now you're playing in September instead of the summer, where it gets darker a lot earlier, so some of the pin locations have been more approachable, and the greens have been a little softer. Do you think once you know get that field cut down and you get into the weekend that they're going to start to make these pin locations tougher?
Well, depending on where the leading score is today, if the leading score is 6 under par or lower, they're probably going to make Saturday is going to be very interesting, because they may do just like what you're intimating there is they may take those hole locations and they may just hide them.
We were talking about, you know, guys that kind of been around the top of these tournaments later, Tony Finau, also Bryson DeChambeau. These guys are, I want to say, within the top 15. Any change on who your favorite is after you saw day one? Are you looking at Thomas at the top of the leaderboard? Are you looking at Finau to make a push? I know we were big on Justin Rose and looking at what Phil might do, Mickelson. But any guys that you've seen in that day one, now you're like, all right, this guy really might have a chance to take this major.
I wasn't that high on Justin Thomas coming into the tournament. But man, he looks good these first that first day. Boy, he was so solid and so in control of his game. It'd be hard to go against Justin as being a real favorite going into the weekend. We'll see what he does today.
I also like Dustin Johnson on that front as well. He is he's 2 under through 10 today, still at 1 over for the. I guess for both days combined so far, but I still like him as someone to keep an eye on. I have another player in mind, Steve, for you, and that is Jordan Spieth. And that's not, you know, that's not just to talk about Spieth in the Open right now, but what is your feelings right now just on kind of where Jordan Spieth is in his career, just kind of on the track that he's been? Obviously, he had one of the hottest starts that we've seen a golfer have there at the beginning of his career, but has kind of just floated around in no man's land lately, and really has not pressed forward into the high rankings of the leaderboards on a whole ton of tournaments here lately. What are your feelings on just kind of where Jordan Spieth's trajectory is headed right now?
He's you've seen this through the years with different golfers. I can remember, you know, different players having struggles like Jordan's having, you know, be like this. Like a shooting star, you just flame out. And that's kind of what happened to Jordan, and he's kind of lost right now. He's trying to find it. He's trying to find that magic. He can't keep the ball in the fairway, and that's his main problem, because then that's affecting the rest of his game. It's putting so much pressure on his putting that he's pressing trying to make those putts, and even his putting is not as good as it was.
Yeah, yesterday, I mean, he stayed out on the range for several hours after his round, and they asked him about it in his post-game interview. He sounded like a broken man at that point. So another guy I wanted to ask you about, Rory McIlroy, who recently in recent history in majors has really struggled on that opening day of majors and then picked it up and been fantastic Friday through Sunday. But yesterday he had a very solid round, 3 under, tied for third. Do you think that, you know, that now he's had that good first day of a tournament, that he's a guy that can really come and take this thing?
I am so glad that you brought him up, because he's it's hard to say that Rory McIlroy's flying under the radar, but he is a little bit. And he's, oh boy, I look for him to be right in there with Justin Thomas, DJ, Rahm may be there. We'll see what he does. And, you know, there's a couple other guys. There's a couple of guys out on the golf course. Bubba Watson and Daniel Berger are playing themselves back into the tournament.
Yeah, Berger on the day right now is 3 under through 12. He's moved up 56 spots in the leaderboards already.
Yeah, you were talking about Rory being flying under the radar. In his last 8 major starts, Rory's been plus 16 in round 1 and a combined minus 23 under in rounds 2 through 4.
Wow, that is an incredible stat.
Steve, we're talking about, you know, Rory, Phil. Obviously, everybody's always on Tiger watch. Tiger started off with a bogey and the double bogey, but then he also had 5 birdies in the round. He finished at 3 over. Think we can see Tiger make a push? Does he still have one of those in him when it comes to playing from behind like that?
It was so disappointing seeing him hang in there at even par all the way through that second 9 of his. And then finish the last 2 holes, bogey, double bogey. That just, boy, you talk about deflating. I can't even imagine what his night was last night and how his dinner tasted.
Let me ask you this question real quick, and this is all I got for you coming up left. But, you know, so for some of these golfers who are sitting at the top of the leaderboard right now, about to go into day 2 coming up here around, I don't know, sometime between 1 and 1:30 for the most part. When you are kind of in this position, and especially when you know you're at a course like Wingfoot Golf Club, right? And you know that it is such a challenging course, but you and the rest of the guys right now playing, you all pretty much just kind of had good games. What is kind of going through your head right now as you're approaching day 2, just kind of thinking to yourself, hey, you know, I'm trying to kind of balance, you know, A, being above maybe expectations of where a lot of us are at the top of the leaderboard with, hey, we still know that at any point this course could rear its head and turn back into a very ugly, tough course.
The analogy I'm thinking of with golf is almost like NASCAR, is where you go mile after mile, lap after lap, and you're jockeying for position, and you're just trying to stay in the race. And these guys are just trying to stay in the tournament. They don't want to go into the last day 5 shots behind. They want to stay within that, let's say a 3-shot window. If they can stay within 3 shots of the lead, then they're going to feel like they got a chance on Sunday.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and then last one before we let you get out of here, and thank you for dropping in with us, Steve, talk about this major. For, you know, Rick's talking about that, the psyche of, because you deal with a little bit of the sports psychology side as well, how difficult is it for these guys switching up tee times? Like a guy like Phil yesterday was in the afternoon. I was thinking about that just recently, and then he had an early morning tee time this morning at the tee off. How much like psyche does that really throw somebody off, especially when you're down and you're trying to get back into?
Well, I tell you what, from my personal experience, I've played some tournament golf just in the PGA of America level, and you know, never tried to play, you know, earn a living or anything playing golf. But you know, I played fairly decent, and I always liked the Thursday morning, Friday afternoon, because you want that Friday afternoon slot, because everybody's trying to make the cut, and you want to see what that morning wave does on Friday, and then you can go out there and you know what the target is. So what
a little
Bill
bit
has
less pressure,
he's,
huh?
He's got the worst. He's got the worst of it. He did the afternoon morning, and I don't like that.
And I'd imagine in that kind of position too. Obviously, you're finishing up your time on the course before the significant rest of the majority of the, you know, the tournament tees off. And at that point, you just got to kind of play the best you can, and then sit and hope for the best the rest of the day. Hope that, you know, either you stay under the cut, maybe hope that some guys fall behind you. But I got to imagine it is tough there to sit there before the first cut and just kind of have to wait and watch all these other golfers play and just, again, hope for the best.
It's just nerve-wracking watching that number move around. It'll go down one, then it'll go up one, then it might go up another one, and you're thinking, oh, I'm going to make it, and then it goes down again.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, based on yesterday, it looks like the cut might be around plus five, plus six.
All right. Well, we'll keep that in mind.
Yes, Steve. Like I said, thank you again for taking some time out of your day to come here and talk U.S. Open with us. We'll have you back on Monday if you can stand us and kind of break down the winner and the entirety of the tournament. Sound good to you?
Hey, this is a lot of fun, you guys. I was thinking y'all can banter this around after I get off. I was thinking who are the big beastie guys on tour? You were talking about beastie football players,
beefy.
You know, the big hulks like that offensive
line.
Oh
yeah.
For tennis. I think Bryson DeChambeau might be that guy.
Bryson DeChambeau, I feel like could be a great tight end.
You got a guy that goes by Beef. I feel like that's a good place to start.
That's a great place to start.
Patrick Reed, I guess we'll throw him up there. He's kind of a big guy.
He kind of is, yeah.
He's a beefy boy. Well, Steve, we really do appreciate it, and we'll talk to you again on Monday to break this all down and see who won this damn thing.
I look forward to it. It's going to be a great weekend.
All right, thank you. Steve McCullough, former PGA pro instructor, golf extraordinaire. Like I said, he also dabbles in a little bit of the world of the sports psyche of golf.
Yeah.
He's an all-around golf expert. He's been in the business for over 25 years, I believe, is what he told me. So.
I'll tell you what, man. I have really enjoyed these two conversations we've had with him, because you can tell that you can tell that he really is kind of on the expert level, right? And obviously, the three of us were football experts. I don't really know too many people who know more than us, but.
You know,
say that with a little bit of sarcasm, but you know, that's why it is nice to kind of sit here and be able to talk with someone that knows just way more about this sport than me and can answer so many of those questions. And
oh yeah, we get.
I'm sure a lot of the questions that we have, you know, Chance, like something you said, like I think anybody would be kind of interested in that. Like, hey, what really are the challenges between, you know, maybe a late tee time on Friday, rolling around to a morning
8:00,
tea time.
10 o'clock,
yeah,
you know, tea time the next day.
Or on Thursday to Friday or whatever. So I hope we're asking good questions, but I've really enjoyed both those conversations.
It's been very educational, informative, and also entertaining. Like I said, we like to get good guests in here. Nobody's just going to be too boring for all of us. But not like, I love golf talk. I know Charlie's voiced his opinion on how much he loves the golf talk. Like I said, it's good to have an expert in here who's talked a lot of golf
for many
years.
Not to mention anybody who makes a Beefy Boys reference gets an A+ in my book. Yeah. Hey. Yeah. Boys. Yeah. Holla, holla. Holla. All right, back here on the Blitz. 11:23 a.m., and without any further ado, we will head into an opening drive. Like, drive as in football drive or golf drive now.
It could be golf drive
now.
Yeah,
we can add that into it.
I like it.
I was going to say first down, but let's stick with the golf mentality. Let's say first shot of the day.
Gotcha.
First shot of the day. All-NBA first team has been announced on Wednesday. Here are your five players on it. James Harden from the Houston Rockets. Luka Doncic from the Dallas Mavericks. Giannis Antetokounmpo, also just won MVP from the Milwaukee Bucks. And then finally, LeBron James and Anthony Davis of the Los Angeles Lakers. So you got Luka, Harden, LeBron, Giannis, AD. That is your All-NBA first team. Who, this is my question to you guys, who is most likely to not be on that team next year?
Charlie, you go first.
I need you to go first because
let me tell you, I think that Steph Curry is going to take his spot back.
Yeah,
when he comes next year.
I think Steph, when he comes back, I've been watching some of his like training videos, him shooting in the gym. I mean, looks like the same Steph. I would say the players that are not going to be on there, you can trade out. Giannis.
Really?
Yep.
I think he's wow.
I think he's going to take a step back.
Wow.
I'm still putting LeBron on there. I'm still putting AD. Got to go James Harden. I got to go my guy Luka. I think he's on there for the next 12 years, first team.
Yeah.
And then I'm putting Steph Curry.
You know what? I'm
That's
say,
tough.
I'm
That's
gonna,
who do wow. you take out when you think about it? James Harden, one of the most used players in the NBA. Has
was
a high usage rate every single season.
Was it Curry instead of Luka last year? Is that how the five rounded out? No, because LeBron probably was not.
I think LeBron might have been.
Right, no, LeBron wasn't on.
He was on second team.
I don't even think. I don't know. I know he wasn't on the first team
because he didn't
missed
play
like 30 games.
Yeah, he
That's
didn't
true.
Play much. Let me look it up while you're giving yours.
Honestly, I don't know if I'm changing this list. I don't think Steph Curry is going to make it back on there. And
okay, it's a good answer.
I mean, I think that maybe when is LeBron finally going to regress a little?
Like
bit
when is he
going
to have that Tom Brady moment?
Like,
we're
when
all
is
like,
he finally
okay, yeah.
going to have it.
Universally, we all agree that this player.
Okay,
won.
So the
I got it from the All-NBA first team.
I bet AD wasn't on there.
2019. Wow. Okay. Very interesting. It's loading right now for me. Here we go.
It was Giannis.
Yes.
Paul George.
Yep.
The Joker, Nikola Jokic, James Harden, and Steph Curry.
So trading out this year, you I guess carrying over from last year, you had Giannis and Harden, and then you had Steph Curry trade out for Luka.
Yeah.
Paul George trade out for LeBron.
Yep.
And Nikola Jokic trade out for Anthony Davis. So you had three switches from last year to this year. I think you only have one, and I think James Harden is off the list. I think Steph Curry goes on in his spot.
It's hard to see Harden off there, in my opinion. But
I know,
yeah,
maybe
it is
Jamal
for me
Murray.
Too.
Maybe he propels his playoff performance into a very solid regular
Golly,
season.
That'd be
Paul
crazy.
George first team.
That would be something else. All right, guys. Second down. The Georgia football team has unveiled new jerseys. Have you seen these on the internet?
Oh, they're so
Oh
bad.
My God. What
are they
doing?
Are they this bad?
Look, I
they
hate it.
So bad.
I hate it. I hate any kind of cartoony element. I mean, you guys know me. Like, I like my football uniforms as traditional as possible. Give me like a nice stripe on the side of the arm. That's great. But it's got a dog collar, like with teeth. So I don't even know if it. I guess a dog collar with spikes. That's probably more along the lines.
It's the spikes.
It's
to
the spikes
like, with
of
the,
a
the
dog collar.
And stuff. Yeah,
I'm not seeing these spikes that you're talking about.
They're around the neck.
You
part.
Must not be looking at the right picture because it's impossible to miss. Although, okay, so the
I just see these red
ones,
and white jerseys.
The red and white ones are great.
I was saying, that's what I see. I like
do
those.
Like those because
the black jerseys.
Yeah, and they're like they also have like a gray one, I believe.
The wait, a gray one.
Yes. I think. Do the red ones not have the
they
spikes?
Don't. They don't.
Okay, well, I love those ones. Those are fine. They look classic. They look clean.
My favorite part about the red ones, though, is they have a 40th year national championship anniversary past just reminding everyone that it's been 40 years since Georgia's won a national championship because they
almighty.
Choke.
Oof. Bad news bears.
It's been 22 for Tennessee.
Hey, that's 18 less if I did my math right.
I'm 24 years old.
It's getting up there, though. It's like Tennessee fans,
I didn't even see it.
Pot meat kettle sometimes. Pot meat kettle. I don't necessarily hate the black ones, but I don't really like them that
they
much.
They don't do much
now,
for
their
you.
Their red and white ones are nice.
I like those
a lot.
And then Ole Miss also debuted a new jersey. Holy smokes. I wish I could buy one of these. I love the new Ole Miss jersey.
Very unpopular idea, but I've always liked Georgia's jerseys. Just the red and black. I've always thought
I do
it
too.
Was okay.
I mean, I think that's a clean look. That's a classic look. But did you see the Ole Miss blue one?
Is it a different?
Ooh, I like it.
Is that a new jersey?
It's a powder blue, yeah.
Because they wear the powder blue
so,
once or twice a year, but did they change their powder
that,
blue up?
We'll be wearing a powder blue uniform for the first time. Yeah, for the first time.
I like them.
For the first?
Yeah, powder blue. They don't. I don't.
They
I
wear
can't.
Powder blue every year, two or three times.
But is it a full powder blue jersey?
It is a full powder blue, yes.
I don't know, Charlie.
What do you mean the first time, Ole Miss?
It just says Ole Miss teases new look uniforms ahead of season opener versus Florida.
They wear them all the time. Oh, also they showed.
I don't
stadium.
Think we've ever seen Ole Miss with that shade
this,
of blue.
Not
that
this
is
powder
a very,
blue.
Yeah, that's a
Have
very
you looked
much
at
more
them, Charlie?
Distinct
yes,
powder blue.
Yes.
Charlie, I don't think you can find a picture of this exact
I'm
uniform.
I'm looking.
I mean, that's almost
they,
like
when
Duke
they played
blue.
Memphis, they were wearing powder blue.
No way.
Yes.
All right, look it up, because I think these are this is a new shade of blue, for sure.
I like it. Lane train.
The lane train. All right, continuing on, third down. We'll see if we can get a definitive answer.
I see
that
a powder
question.
Blue helmet when they played Memphis. I do not see a powder blue
Uh-oh.
Jersey.
You know you're going to have to take your L. Either we'll take our L's.
I know that they've won.
No. Either we'll take our L's or you take your L after this one. Just know that. It's coming
third
up.
Third shot.
Third down. Third shot. Thank
third
you.
Shot.
Third shot. Gentlemen, the Stanley Cup Finals is set. The Tampa Bay Lightning defeat the New York Islanders in the, what is this, the Eastern Conference Finals heading into the NHL Stanley Cup. They will meet Dallas, as it will be the Tampa Bay Lightning versus the Dallas Stars. Puck drop will be tomorrow night, 6:30 p.m., I believe, maybe 7:30. I'm not entirely sure. But it'll be the Stars and the Lightning in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah.
Get out of here with your Canadian hockey team. We got a hockey team from Texas and Florida in the championship.
Yeah.
Like, what is that? That's
and
crazy.
They say Canada
every
plays
boy,
hockey.
Every young boy growing
That's
up in Saskatoon
crazy.
Dreams of a... Tampa Bay, Dallas Stars, Stanley Cup final. But in all reality, I mean, two really exciting teams. It's going to be an electric Stanley Cup final. I'm really excited to watch it. I'll be tuned in every game. You have two goaltenders that are incredibly hot right now and two offenses that can really just generate offense quickly. I mean, I'm excited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I certainly am,
too. My hockey take. They're playing that hockey.
It's cold. Still got to watch that video again.
Let's do this hockey.
Oh, man.
That's
so good. That's so good. All right. And then fourth down, a little bit of a combination here that we will take into the next segment as game two of the Eastern Conference Finals, this time in the NBA, though, is final. Heat 106, Celtics 101. Also, Giannis Antetokounmpo has won his second straight MVP award for the National Basketball Association. And if you even want to throw something on top of that, coming up tonight at 9 o'clock will be the Western Conference Finals, Game 1 between the Denver Nuggets and the LA Lakers. We're about to take a quick break, but on the other side of the break, we will get into some of these NBA playoff matchups tonight, as well as, man, what in the heck happened after the game yesterday between the Celtics and Marcus Smart. It's a whole story that we'll give you all the information on, especially while Brandon isn't here to defend his team. Coming up next, right here on The Blitz. You put the boom boom into my heart. You send my soul sky high when your loving starts. Jitterbug into my brain. Yeah, yeah. Goes to bang, bang, bang. Till my feet do the same. But something's bugging me. Something ain't right. My best friend told me what you do. All right, here we go. Back here on The Blitz, 11:37 a.m. It's a Friday. We are headed into the weekend. Hey, sit tight. You only have a couple more hours until that weekend feeling is here. All right, take you back to last night where the Heat defeated the Boston Celtics 106-101 to take a 2-0 advantage on the Boston Celtics. The Heat are now 10-1 in the playoffs, the hottest team in the NBA by far. That is a team that is having a very tough time losing basketball games right now. Yesterday's game, though, was a game of runs. Game was pretty much even all first quarter. Boston was able to take a big lead kind of heading into halftime as they dominated the second quarter, kind of came back and closed the gap a little bit, was the Heat in the third quarter, then taking a lead into the fourth quarter on a big run by Miami. Boston goes on a run there towards the end of the fourth quarter, and then finally the Heat take a nice little run to close out the game. They win 106-101. But guys, I think the biggest story out of this game came what happened afterwards. After the game, it was reported that there was a brouhaha of sorts in the Celtics locker room. Here is what Shams had to say from The Athletic. Sources say that Celtics guard Marcus Smart and Jaylen Brown had a heated conversation inside the locker room after game two and needed to be separated by teammates. Marcus Smart, Chance, you talked about this earlier today, widely considered Boston's emotional leader, one of the leaders of that team, was heard shouting inside the postgame locker room. Smart stormed into the Celtics postgame locker room after declining to talking to media, saying that other players needed to be held accountable and not simply point the finger towards him when things are going wrong. As Smart continued and basically started talking louder and louder, Jaylen Brown reportedly snapped back and shouted that Celtics players must stay together and that their actions must come as a team, not individually, and that Smart needed to cool off. Those sources added that Smart had a verbal exchange with a couple of assistant coaches during the game as well. It says that there were objects being thrown around inside the locker room. Smart and Brown have since then, it seems, smoothed tensions over, but you got to expect that, man, if it happens once, it likely could happen again, some kind of emotional blowout there. Brad Stevens basically commented on this to the media after the game as well. He said, hey, guys are just emotional. And that's pretty much all he had to say about this. Chance, when you see something like this between, I know that neither of these guys are the best player on the Celtics, but certainly two of the most important pieces on the Celtics team, two widely considered leaders on this team. Look, you got a Celtics team who just came off of a very emotional seven-game series with the Raptors, one that they were projected to almost dominate in at the beginning of the series.
Yep.
Then they completely let their foot off the gas. They lose their balance. They fall on their face. Toronto's able to come back. Boston barely sneaks out a victory in the end, then comes into this Heat series and just has gotten wrecked in the first two games. Then all of that leads into this big altercation at the end of game two. What are your big takeaways when you see this with all the things that the Celtics have gone through the last 7 to 10 days or so?
There's trouble in the bubble for the Celtics and Brad Stevens' team. When you talk about your emotional leader, Marcus Smart, kind of seemed like he's at his wit's end and kind of at his breaking point. That's not good. When they came into the bubble and highly regarded with the way they played as like a really cohesive unit and kind of like a very close-knit team. But now it seems like there's a little despair there. There's trouble. There is, you know, with this brouhaha, what do you want to say, a kerfluffle, whatever. Like, there's something going on, and this is something you can't have in the playoffs. This is when all your guys got to be locked in. We talk about the Lakers. We're talking about the Nuggets looking like how focused they are and how they've come together. I mean, that's how the Lakers have talked about it. This is not what you want when you get to the finals. I mean, and you can tell that there's something with whether it is, you know, maybe we underestimated how much they needed Hayward out there. Maybe he helped balance it out. You got Kemba taking shots late when Jason Tatum's hot. Probably a little struggle there. Kemba kind of brought in to be the closeout guy at the end of the games, but really Jason Tatum is who needs the ball. He's their best player on their team. So maybe there's little egos there. And when they blow a 17-point halftime lead and then the lead that they blew in the first game, they had a lead too, I believe, right, Charlie?
Yeah, it wasn't as big.
It wasn't as big, but yeah, the 17-point halftime lead. I mean, the Heat are just – the Heat look like the better team unit. They look more –
they look like the better team on the court and off the court right now. To me, and Charlie, you'll certainly get your opinion because this is
and this might be correlated just because of the talent that the Heat have compared to the other teams that are in the finals.
Okay.
The Heat – the blue-collar team. We talk about that Jimmy Butler blue-collar team. So, like, they look like the better team not only in this finals, but you could argue that they look like the better team overall compared to the talent that they have compared to other teams, like the best team in the bubble. They've only lost one game.
I think so, too. And the only other thing that I had to say about this, the altercation at the end of the game was, to me, it just screams emotional exhaustion. Right, I know these players are probably physically exhausted as well, just with the amount of basketball and the amount of meaningful basketball they've played in the last 2 months or so. But with everything I just said leading up to the game yesterday and leading up to kind of the end of the game and then the arguing match afterwards, to me it looks like a team that is emotionally exhausted, and like they are. I mean, you really did. Like, you just went through. Probably at times a miserable series versus the Raptors, pushed all the way to seven games. You probably didn't expect to be there. You expected to take one of these first two games versus the Heat, and when you don't, you know you're backed into a corner. You're probably exhausted. You've spent so much time around the same exact people without seeing really anybody else. I think these guys just look, like we were saying earlier, look a little lost, look a little thrown off their game, and when you're playing the Heat right now, who are the best team in the NBA, man, you can't be sliding like this. You can't have any off-the-court drama because the Heat will burn you. And I think that's what they're going to do the rest of this series. I think after the altercation yesterday, I might get proven wrong, but to me that was maybe the nail in the coffin. I still expect maybe Boston to pick up a game or two along the way, but to me the Heat should have this series wrapped up. Boston looks exhausted.
Yeah, I mean, we just spent almost 10 minutes talking about what the Celtics did wrong. How about talking about what the Heat did right? I mean, as much as there's some disarray among the Boston Celtics, the Miami Heat are playing exceptional basketball.
Oh, whoa. First off, don't come in here saying, well, we got to talk the Heat a little bit. Chance and I have just mentioned on four different separate occasions that they're the best team in basketball right now. We're
talking about last night's game. Like, we're talking about what went wrong for Boston, but what went right for the Heat? I mean, Eric Spoelstra is running circles around Brad Stevens right now, which is surprising to an extent. But he really is. And you look, they were getting beat by Kemba early. Game one, you were able to neutralize Kemba because you wore him out so much defensively. He wasn't able to be as effective offensively, but he started wearing you out in game two. So you switched to the zone and you just baffled the Celtics. And for some reason against the zone, they never put anyone in the middle of said zone to try to attack it. And then you have guys like Jimmy Butler, guys like Bam Adebayo that just play winning basketball. They don't always have to get theirs. They'll let their teammates get theirs first, and then you can score if you need to. I mean, they just played some – don't give me that. Jimmy Butler. How about Jimmy D – Jimmy Buckets? How about
Jimmy G Buckets. The G stands for gets.
How about Jimmy Defense instead? Three steals in the final 4 minutes. Winning the game.
He's always been a great defender.
I love the idea.
At some points in his career, he's been the best one-on-one defender in the game.
Yeah. I love the idea in just a basketball mindset of going to a zone and putting your forwards at the top of the zone. That's something I feel like I don't see that often, but that's what Spoelstra did with the Heat zone, and I loved that. Like, you had big Jay Crowder at the top of the zone. Meanwhile, you might have a guy to his left like Goran
Jay Crowder
Dragic.
Wants nothing more than anything than send these Celtics home after
easily.
They traded him
yes.
to Cleveland. He wants to send them home so bad.
I totally agree, but I feel
He's
like
balling.
That's just a great fundamental basketball move. I mean, your shooters obviously want to shoot from the top of the key, so you put your forwards up there instead of the guards. The only other thing I had to say was, once again, shout out Grant Williams getting great minutes in the fourth quarter. Brad Stevens loves Grant Williams.
Grant's got to play more. I like the tweet that you sent us that Draymond Green was talking about. He needs to play the five.
When he came in, we went 5 minutes without scoring.
Yeah, it is. I know we're probably running out of this bumper. Here's what that tweet said, because I think it's good. This comes from Draymond Green. Boston needs to go with Grant Williams at the five, put JB on hero, switch the pick and roll, then that will take away the Bam dive. Grant Williams needs to play more, flat out. He's a baller.
I think we'll see him play more.
I think we'll see him play more in this third game.
Next year. We'll figure it out next year.
Hey, let's go with a little confidence predictions. Coming up next, closing things out here on the Blitz. Well, this one's been tough to pick. I will tell you that. There's no gimmies this week. There is legitimately no gimmies. I think that I'm about as confident in my seventh pick as I am my second pick. But it is time for my favorite, for your favorite, for our favorite Friday segment. Confidence picks and predictions for this upcoming weekend in football. All right, here's you go. Here's what we got working with. 10 games, of course. We already picked one. We didn't pick it, actually, yesterday, but basically here's what it was. We already got the Thursday night football game out of the way. Chance and I were correct in our picks with Cleveland, and Brandon and Charlie had gone with Cincinnati. So that's what things look like after the Thursday night game. But other than that, we got 9 football games to pick. Hey, let's do it quickly. Let's get through it. First game on the menu. We go 2 college football games this weekend. Our last college football weekend before we can finally do the half and half again and get those SEC games in as well. Here's what we got cooking. First game up, number 17 Miami at number 18 Louisville. This will be the host site of College Game Day. Charlie, I'll start with you, my friend. Who do you got?
Miami looked uninspired against UAB. They haven't really been all that great lately. They added Derek King, but they also had their best pass rusher opt out. Louisville's very well coached, have the fastest receiver in football. I got the Cardinals, and I'm decently confident with 5 points.
Yeah, I don't really like either one in this matchup. Yeah. It's game day game. It's going to be one of the more entertaining games we've had of the season now. Actually, some really quality ranked teams, I guess you'd say. It pains me to do this, but I'm going to pick the Canes. As a Florida State fan, that's really tough, but I'm only giving them 1 confidence point. I don't have a lot of faith in them, like you said. They didn't look that great versus UAB, and I think Louisville's a better team. I think Scott Satterfield's a better coach, but I don't have that much faith in them either, but I'll go Miami with 1 point.
I'm not in front of you by too much, Chance. I'm not entirely confident on this one, but I'm going to go with Miami 4-3. Next game up, number 14 UCF at Georgia Tech, who just came away with a big upset victory over Florida State. Charlie, what you going with this one?
Yeah, I'm sneaking a little upset in here, Rick. I know Georgia Tech is more than a touchdown underdog at this point, but UCF hasn't played a game yet, and Georgia Tech's already played. I mean, they beat Florida State, and they're a little bit more comfortable, and I think we've seen that in some of these early games. The teams that have already played have had an advantage over those that have not. So Georgia Tech in 3.
Georgia Tech in 3, huh? I know Georgia Tech looked good. Like I said, they beat Florida State. Jeff Sims came in there. He's a little irritated Florida State. He wanted to go to Florida State. They didn't pick him. I don't think that's going to be the same thing this week, though. Give me UCF 7 points.
Okay. I'm going to follow the same mindset with UCF, but the opposite mindset with my points. I'm going to go UCF 4-2. Now, we already picked the Thursday night football game as well, so let's move into the Sunday games in the NFL. First one up, the Atlanta Falcons at the Dallas Cowboys. Neither team won in week one. Now, here's the stat you need to know. Here's why both teams need to win. Teams that start out 1-1 typically can make the playoffs still over 40% of the time. Teams that start out 0-2 only make the playoffs 12% of the time. One of these teams between Atlanta and Dallas will start out 0-2. Both teams cannot afford to do so. Who do you have and why?
Give me the Cowboys. I think Zeke has a big game. I also think that you see Dak really lean on Amari Cooper. So give me Dallas with 6.
Yeah, I got Dallas with 8, apparently. I was feeling really confident last night. But I'm just going to roll with it. Yeah, I mean, the Falcons defense is just booty.
Guys, I'm going with the Dallas Cowboys of America's team for one confident point. I feel like I drew myself into a pickle last week, picking the Cowboys with so much. I am so terrified of Julio Jones as a fan of the Cowboys. The Cowboys have no secondary defense. I think Julio Jones might rack up 120 yards plus, but I'm still going to pick Dallas with 1 point. Next game up, the Jacksonville Jaguars at the Tennessee Titans, who the Tennessee Titans and wide receiver A.J. Brown dealing with a little bit of injury concern right now. Will that be enough to make you pick Jacksonville in this matchup?
I'm going to go Jacksonville 3. I liked what Minshew did in the first week. Still not that confident in them, but I will go with the Jaguars 3 points.
Yeah, I mean, the Titans might be without A.J. Brown. Their secondary is a little banged up against an efficient Minshew, but they're still heavy favorites, and I guarantee Henry runs for at least 200 yards. Titans and 10 points.
I am I'm in the same direction as Charlie. I'm going with the Tennessee Titans for 9 points, although I do not like that A.J. Brown will be out. But, hey, who knows? Maybe Corey Davis stepped up into a little bit of a good role after his week one performance. Next game up, the Carolina Panthers at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Guys, I've been on the Tampa Bay bandwagon all offseason long, so I will tell you right now that I'm going to go with Tampa Bay for 7 to take this game.
Yeah, I'm going to go TB for 5 with a bounce-back game.
I got Carolina for 2. Train wreck continues for Tampa.
There you go. Next game up, the Minnesota Vikings at Indianapolis Colts. Hey, this game a lot like the Atlanta-Dallas game. Neither team can really afford right now to drop down to 0-2. Both teams at 0-1 to start things off. Who do you have with the bounce-back game?
I'm gonna get. I'm going with Minnesota to bounce back and give me the 4 points with them.
Okay.
Yeah, I got the Vikings with 6. They're gonna run the ball all over Indy.
I will go right in between you guys, and I will go Minnesota for 5 points. Bad news for the Colts, though. If they lose, will really hurt their chance of getting into the playoffs. Two more games. Sunday night football, gentlemen. This one should be a fun one. Cam Newton and the new look New England Patriots, trying to take down Russell Wilson and the Seattle Seahawks in prime time. Who do you have in this game? Oh, actually, I skipped one. I'm so sorry.
We'll do that one real quick. I got New England with 8, Cam Newton. That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say Cam, and they neutralize Russell Wilson. That's going to be tough, but I think they do it.
Can't neutralize Russell Wilson. He's the best quarterback in football. Seahawks blow out the Patriots, and Cam Newton struggles.
I will go a little bit in between you guys. I will go Seattle with 6 points in a close Sunday night football game.
Oh. I forgot Seattle 7, by the way.
Okay, Seattle 7. One game back before that, Denver at Pittsburgh. Oh, we're flying out of time. All right, who you got Denver at Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh with 9. Big Ben, Juju.
I got Pittsburgh with 10.
Denver 4.
And then last but not least, New Orleans and Vegas. I have New Orleans with 8.
New Orleans with 10. The Raiders going down.
Saints with 9.
It's National Cheeseburger Day.
Hey, go get yourself a cheeseburger. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the football. We'll see you back on Monday, same time, same place. Brandon will be lifted off suspension. I'm trying to beat out this outro. Here we go. Thanks for listening to The Blitz on Fan Run Radio.